Welcome to the deep dive. So you asked us to dig into this whole wireless thing in industrial automation.
Yeah, what's the potential? What are the hurdles?
All that. Exactly. And that's what we're planning to unpack for you today. We've got this document, drodla001.pdf. Seems quite detailed.
It is. It really lays out the tech and the standards behind this big shift.
Okay.
So our mission here really is to give you a solid, clear understanding of wireless industrial communication.
Right. Like, where is it used? What makes it tick?
Exactly. The applications, the tech underneath, and those, you know, crucial bits like reliability. Security, too.
We want you to get the significance of it, basically, without feeling totally overwhelmed by jargon.
Yeah, without needing that engineering degree, like you said.
Okay, let's jump in then. Why now? Why this big push for wireless in factories and plants? It's not like cables just stopped working.
Huh. No, good point. Well, the source points to a couple of things. There are the immediate practical drivers. Think about temporary setups. It may be testing new equipment or some short-term monitoring project.
Where running cables would be a huge pain and expensive.
Precisely. Or rotating machinery cables are just tricky there. And sometimes you just need to deploy something fast. Wireless gives you that agility.
Okay. Those short-term cases make a lot of sense. Quick wins. But what about the grander vision? Are we really talking wire-free factories someday?
That's definitely the long-term potential being discussed. Imagine wireless connecting pretty much everything across the whole facility. Sensors, controls.
And operators, too. Like walking around with tablets, getting real-time data.
Absolutely. Empowering operators, making data flow freely, making the whole operation more nimble. That's the idea.
Got it. So when we talk wireless networks, there must be rules, right? Standards. The source mentions IEEE 802.x. What's that about?
AE, Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. Think of their 802 specs as the fundamental rule book for different network types.
Okay.
You probably know 802.11, that's your standard Wi-Fi.
Right. At home, the office, everywhere.
Exactly. And figure one in our source actually maps out these different 802 methods. It shows this trade-off between power use and speed.
The classic trade-off. So faster speeds usually mean more power drain.
Typically, yes.
Yeah.
Your home Wi-Fi needs more juice than, say, a tiny sensor designed to sip power from a battery for years.
Okay. Now, the source also talks about different topologies, how the network is actually laid out, what are the options?
Right, topologies. It's about how the devices connect. The simplest is point-to-point. Figure 2 shows that.
So just device A talking directly to device B wirelessly, like cutting a specific cable?
Exactly. But the document flags limitations. Distance is a factor, obviously. And RF interference radio noise can mess with the signal.
Okay, so good for short, clear paths, maybe. What else?
Next is point-to-multipoint, or star topology. That's figure 3.
Star, like a central hub.
Precisely. One central base station talking out to multiple devices, like spokes on a wheel.
What's the catch there?
Well, finding the perfect spot for that central hub can be tricky. You need it to reliably reach all the other devices.
And if that hub goes down?
The whole segment connected to it goes down.
Yeah.
A single point of failure potential, which isn't always ideal for industrial robustness.
Doesn't sound ideal, no. Okay, so what about the third one? Peer-to-peer or mesh? That sounds more connected.
It really is. Figure 4 illustrates this. In a mesh network, each device isn't just sending and receiving. It can also act as a router.
A router. So it passes messages along for its neighbors.
Exactly. It forwards signals. This creates, like, multiple pathways for the data to travel.
Ah, so if one path is blocked or a device fails?
The network can often find another route automatically. That's what the source means by self-organizing and self-healing.
Okay, that sounds much more robust.
It offers redundancy, and it makes scaling easier, too. You just add more nodes, they join the mesh. No single central controller bottleneck.
That redundancy is interesting. It's not just about staying online, right? It could mean you can reconfigure equipment more easily without messing up the whole network.
That's a great point. More flexibility for changing production lines, a key advantage in modern manufacturing.
So mesh seems pretty powerful. The source mentions you can even combine star and mesh.
Yeah, you could have, say, a star network collecting data in one specific area, and then that star's base station connects into a wider mesh network covering the whole plant.
Mix and match for different needs. Makes sense. Now, reliability. We touched on it, but the source has a table comparing these topologies.
It does, yeah. It summarizes the characteristics. And, as you'd expect from our discussion.
Let me guess. Mesh looks best for reliability and scaling.
You got it. Point-to-point is reliable for its single link, but doesn't adapt or scale. Star is kind of low on reliability, limited scaling. Mesh scores high on all three. Reliability, adaptability, scalability.
And the overall reliability still depends on things like clear signal paths, interference levels.
And transmission power, yeah. All those physical factors still matter, of course.
Okay. So we have these different layouts, but are there specific industry standards saying, okay, this is how you should do industrial wireless?
Yes, absolutely crucial for getting everyone on the same page. The source highlights two main global efforts for wireless sensor networks, Wireless HART and ISA SP100.
Wireless HART and ISA SP100.
Right. Both aim for interoperability, making sure devices from different companies can talk to each other.
Which is pretty important. You don't want vendor lock-in.
Definitely not. The document suggests ISA SP100 is maybe gaining a bit more momentum, seems to have strong backing from the end users.
The actual factories using the tech.
Exactly. And this push for open standards is key. It lets companies innovate on their strengths instead of building closed communication systems. Should drive costs down, too, eventually.
And ISA SP100 has these safety classes, 0 to 5. What do those mean?
It's basically a way to categorize how critical the wireless link is for a given task. Class 0 is top-level critical. Emergency actions, safety shutdowns, things that must work.
Highest priority.
Then Class 1 is tight, closed-loop control, think maintaining precise temperature. Class 2 is supervisory control, maybe optimizing things, but less immediately critical.
Right.
Class 3 is open loop, where a human is still involved. Class 4 is for alerts, monitoring. And Class 5 is just basic data logging, downloading stuff.
So it ranks the dependency on the wireless connection.
Pretty much. And the source notes something important here. Classes 3, 4, and 5, they're already out there working reliably in the field.
Okay. Proven tech for those less critical tasks.
But classes 0, 1, and 2, the really critical control and safety stuff, generally aren't considered ready for wireless yet. There are still concerns about guaranteeing that absolute signal reliability.
Understandable. You don't want a safety system failing because of a dropped packet.
Exactly. Now, ISFP 100 itself, it's built on another standard.
Yeah.
IEO 2.15.4 2006.
Another 802 number.
Yeah, this one defines low power, shorter range networks, WPANs, wireless personal area networks. It operates in the 2.4 gigahertz band, same as Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, which can be crowded.
Hmm. Potential for interference again.
It is a consideration. Mm-hmm. But ISA SP100 can be set up as star or mesh. And crucially, it's an open standard using one common application protocol. That really helps with getting different devices to play nicely together.
Interoperability again, super important. Okay. If data's flying through the air, security, this has to be a massive concern.
Oh, absolutely paramount. The source basically says it's the most important thing to consider, especially in industry with critical processes.
Makes sense. Industrial networks have unique challenges too, right? Older equipment, maybe physical access concerns.
Good point. It's not just like securing an office IT network.
Yeah.
So the source outlines the main security techniques.
Lay them on us. How do they lock it down?
Okay, first, data encryption. Scrambling the signal so only devices with the right key can read it. Keeps the data confidential.
Standard stuff, but essential.
Then, network authentication. Like a bouncer at the door. Only verified trusted devices get onto the network.
Device ID check. Got it.
Third, anti-interference or anti-jamming. Things like frequency hopping.
Frequency hopping, like the signal jumps between radio channels really fast.
Exactly. Makes it harder for interference, intentional or not, to disrupt the signal consistently.
Clever.
And finally, code management. Those encryption keys, the authentication credentials, they need to be guarded carefully. Only authorized people should handle them.
So multiple layers of defense, not just one lock on the door.
That's the idea. It has to be robust.
Okay, security covered. What about keeping these wireless gadgets powered up, especially out on the plant floor, miles from an outlet?
Right. Power is a big practical challenge. The source mentions a few ways. You might use local energy sources if available nearby,
mm-hmm.
especially for devices that need more power.
Okay.
Then there are batteries. Good for low power devices or places that are really hard to reach with wires.
Makes sense.
And then there's the really interesting one, energy scavenging or harvesting.
Yes. Using the environment itself.
Exactly. Converting ambient energy light via solar cells, like in figure 5,
mm-hmm.
or mechanical vibrations, even waste heat into electricity to power the device.
So your sensor is powered by the machine shaking next to it?
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds futuristic, but it's happening.
Very cool. How else do they save power?
Well, there's measurement on demand. The device only wakes up and sends data when it actually needs to, instead of being constantly on.
Instead of continuously transmitting.
Right. This links to the scan time, how often it sends an update. Faster updates, more power used. Slower updates, less power.
A trade-off between timeliness and battery life.
Precisely. The source says a one-second scan time is achievable now, which is pretty good for many industrial uses.
And not everything needs sub-second updates.
Not at all. Another trick is synchronizing when devices talk, using TDMA Time Division Multiple Access. It schedules specific time slots for each device to transmit, prevents them talking over each other, avoids data collisions, and means they only power up their radios when it's their turn. Saves energy.
Smart scheduling, like an air traffic controller for data packets.
Good analogy, yeah.
The source also has figure 6 and 7, just quick illustrations.
Pretty much. Figure 6 shows connecting an older wired field bus system to a remote PC using a wireless gateway.
Ah, bridging old and new tech.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A common way to extend existing systems wirelessly. And figure 7 just gives a general visual of how these different network structures might look deployed in an industrial setting, putting the topologies into context.
Got it. Seeing laid out. Okay, let's try and wrap this up. If we boil it all down, what are the main takeaways from this deep dive on industrial wireless?
Well, I think the big one is that wireless is fundamentally changing industrial automation, brings huge flexibility, makes scaling easier.
Right. And we've seen there are different ways to build these networks, point-to-point, star, mesh, each with pros and cons, especially around reliability.
And mesh often comes out on top for robustness and scalability in complex environments. Security, as we stressed, is absolutely non-negotiable. Mm. Encryption, authentication, anti-jamming critical layers.
And those standards like ISASP 100 are paving the way for wider use by ensuring devices can actually work together.
Definitely. But, and it's an important but, careful thought still needs to go into reliability for those supercritical control loops, and power management is always a practical hurdle to solve.
So for you listening, the upshot is this shift could mean faster deployment of systems in your operations, getting data from places you couldn't easily monitor before.
And that potentially leads to better insights, maybe more efficient processes overall, more agility.
Okay, final thought then, something for you to chew on.
Given how fast wireless tech is moving, what happens when we can really build entirely wireless factories? How does that change the whole game?
Yeah, how does it reshape the automation architecture we used to, and what skills will people need then?
What new things become possible when you take away most of the physical wiring constraints? It's definitely an exciting space to watch. Lots of potential still unfolding.